everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. Today, Andrew Henderson is on assignment elsewhere. He just didn't want to be with you and I, Jay Truitt.
Out, right? Well, some people might suggest that we've run him off. And that, no. While that's true, that's not what happened.
You can't run Andrew off.
No, yeah.
He just keeps coming back.
Good people.
Yep.
He just doesn't like me. I'm going to be offended, I think. No, I won't. Never mind. That didn't last very long. I'm just not very good. Not very good at being a victim, right? It only, like, about 10 seconds. That was a record for me. So... Yeah, good.
My nephew was a victim in your backyard. I shouldn't put it into context of being a bad victim, but as much of a victim as you were. So Grayson Tedrow, my 19-year-old, I think he's 19 now, maybe 20, nephew, went to Belton, Temple, Texas over the weekend. There's a major pig show, breeding stock show down there every year, the first weekend of March. And he had the high selling spot gilt. Kudos to Grayson Tedrow. Of course, she came from good stock. He does too, by the way. And so here's how active this guy is. He had this pig sale where he was down there basically by himself in Texas. There was a group of people of Illinois he went with, but he had to get back to Quincy to go to another pig sale on Sunday. So he gets done in Temple, Texas. He's on a schedule. If he leaves right on time, he can be back to Quincy, Illinois by midnight, get up, go to his next pig show by 4:30 in the morning.
All right.
Well, Fort Worth didn't have the same idea. He never moved for 2 hours, Jay.
There was
an accident. He was close to it. He was pulling a trailer, so he didn't have the flexibility. 2 hours he sat in on the interstate waiting for them to fix that. That's just excruciating.
And honestly, so there was a time when all of Texas was just known for their great highways and the transportation system here, right? Mm-hmm. And in about a half a dozen places in the state, they have not just exceeded, but now they've doubled and tripled and quadrupled the number of vehicles on that. They've tried to keep up, but they doubled the highways and quadrupled the people and cars and stuff on them. So in the old days, you know, that accident wouldn't have been a big deal. Yeah. I mean, just not a big deal. They'd have pushed it off to the side, and there's still plenty of room because, again, Texas was known for always having one more lane than everybody else. Not the case today. You plug up 35, 30, 20, 75, 635 in Dallas, and the entire place comes to a standstill. So you can be behind a wreck, but it's you and about a half a million other people. And sometimes that's almost a literal number, you and a half a million other people. So it gets pretty crazy. It's not good. Austin is worse. That's the only thing Dallas is relying on right now, is that Austin is still worse. And people in Houston now have a joke, and there's bumper stickers everywhere say, "I live in Houston. It's 45 minutes to everywhere." All the major cities in this part of the world they're playing catch up, and they're trying to build, right? But in some cases it's a big thing. 635 is now becoming two levels of traffic, an upper and a lower in some places, and that, you know, they'll get it figured out, I'm pretty sure, but I may not live to see it.
So, I mean, I think this is a worthy discussion because we're at a time when people are seeking the right place to go relocate, and Florida and Texas seems to be that place. But my question is, and I was in Florida in January, and I heard the horror stories about how agriculture is literally being pushed out of a great agricultural state, Florida.
Yeah.
Texas is swelling in population to the point where at some point somebody's got to say, hey, what are we really going to do here?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that you do hear some pretty matured conversations from people that are in the in a good number of the Chamber of Commerce's and city leadership roles, right? Not everybody, mm-hmm. but a lot of them. And listen, I'm an outlier here. So the next statement I'm going to make makes me an outlier. We build residential houses and we go out and build, you know, that's one of the things that our family is involved in. But, and we do that out in the country. We build developments out in the country when somebody's a city is already designated that that's going to be a residential land, we go out and build houses on it. So I'm a guilty party. I'll say that. And I do think it's the wrong thing to do, honestly. But I am of the belief that at some point in most of these bigger cities, we need to figure out how to go up, not out. And that's not how most people here want to live, though. They want to live in a single family dwelling. They don't like, you know, high rise apartments and et cetera. But we're going to have to figure that out in major urban areas, how that we can build in a denser path instead of just constantly creeping out. I drive over places. Well, it's funny. I went to eat with a good friend of mine on the outskirts of Dallas this last week, and we were just remarking how when we were kids that was a really good ranch was underneath the place where we were eating, you know. And now we're 15 miles from even the remotest edge of town from there. And that's the problem. The Dallas-Fort Worth now extends all the way. You can look on a map, and it really starts at Fate, Texas on the east and goes all the way to Midlothian on the west. And that's, I don't know, that's probably close to 80 to 100 miles, 100 miles probably across there. Feels like about 4 days if you have to drive it. And that's, you know, that's happening in a lot of places. Florida, just as bad. Here, there's probably some land that it didn't really change the dynamic too much of the state, but it will over time. And it's really not about just the traffic. It's about what are you destroying underneath concrete foundations? Because once you pour concrete on a piece of ground,
yeah,
you know, it's done. You've finished it. It takes a lot to recover that.
Just to put it into context, because I looked it up with the U.S. Census while you're talking. From July of 2022 to July of 2023. Texas grew with legal population. I can't speak to what happened to illegal population, but legal population, the expansion was equal to the population of the state of Nebraska.
Yeah. Yeah.
1.7 million.
One of the economic development folks that I listen to here at one of these functions where they're talking about where the future growth is going to be, et cetera, made the reference that there were 10,000 people a day, most times of the year that we're moving just into the North Texas region. Wow. Now, so that doesn't count. And those are jobs that are being created, et cetera. I was talking about Dallas, what's happening in Dallas. If you go to Sherman, Texas, mm-hmm. it's even more unbelievable what's going on up there. It's going to become one of the chip manufacturing's capitals of the world, right? And everywhere you look around the horizon, you see giant cranes that are building 40 and 60 acre buildings that they're going to, I mean, they're giant facilities. That they're going to build that. You go to Lancaster, Texas, and there are distribution centers that along one of the highways there that just goes on for miles and miles and miles. And it's, you know, it's all the big names, the people that you would expect. It's Amazon, somebody else, right? Whatever all the big companies are. But there's also, like, there's a big licorice company that exports out of there. There's a motor manufacturing plant there. There's et cetera, et cetera. And so those kinds of things, I mean, it's good. That's the kind of development. And those are the kind of jobs in a lot of respects, right, that are hard manufacturing jobs, high wage jobs that people say that are the target. But the victim of that is that where once I used to go with my dad to Throckmorton, Texas, and buy bulls, and it was a little bitty spot on the map, and we went to a ranch outside of town that had thousands of cattle. Now there's houses.
Donald Brown would tell you they're still in business. Come to Throckmorton and see us.
Yeah,
we got it.
Yeah,
speaking of cattle, we got to talk about the Great Plains cattlemen working together to produce certified Piedmontese, and that's all about the genetics and the tenderness gene. Get more details, and here's the deal. You don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. CPBeef.com or Jay Truitt. Trent Luce, roll right after this. Welcome back. Roller out, Trent Lewis alongside Jay Truitt. Throckmorton's a great example because that used to be way outside of Texas. Throckmorton now is on the edge of the development.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes past Weatherford, and Throckmorton is the next target.
And you're going to be Throckmorton is going to be inside the circle. They're already taking the maps and laying them out. And if people will sell that land for outrageously high prices per acre, they'll get it. And that's where there's a piece of me that, property rights are property rights. And if you decide that you want to sell your property so somebody can build houses on it, how can I actually limit that when I don't want you to limit what I say I can do with my property?
Yeah.
Right. It's a two-edged sword. And I think this is more about, this is another one of those times though, where we ask the government to do what's truly in our best interest, not what's in government's best interest. And what's in government's best interest is to have houses built that they can collect a higher rate of property tax on. And to increase that, and then they increase the number of government services, which gives them more power over new territory. It's basically like they're infringing. But is that really in the people's best interest? And the problem is, to serve the rest of the people, you're going to have to deny someone the ability to really cash in on that. And I don't really have the solution. I think the better solution is to not really, the spread is going to continue to be happening, but I think the city can do a lot for its internal infrastructure, and I will give both Dallas and Houston credit for this. Especially they have made it all the incentives they can for people to build vertical office space downtown, and we have in the Dallas Fort Worth market, as an example, right? Basically, every firm that's in New York City on Wall Street is now building an office in Dallas somewhere,
really?
Either Dallas or Addison or on the outskirts of Fort Worth. And so, a lot of Wall Street's working people, maybe not the leadership of the office of that whole company, but all the rest of the people are all coming here to work. We have better internet. We have better this. We have et cetera. And as long as they have a generator, they have electricity. No, but that's kind of a joke here.
You are on ERCOT, and ERCOT issued another stark warning this week.
Oh, yeah. And and people know it's coming, right?
Yeah.
It's going to take them a while to get all those plants that used to produce electricity back 100% online, and it's probably not going to happen in time for 100 degree temperatures this summer.
I wanted to just give a perspective for those of us that don't live in Texas, but you maybe go through Texas. I've been through it a lot. You mentioned 80 to 100 miles, and you had the west side, the east side. That's where the development is. But literally, it's not. You could make the case that Throckmorton to Tyler, east to west. And what is that? 200 miles? Is that 200?
Probably. Miles? Yeah, close to that. It'd be maybe about 160, 180 miles.
And that is Dallas-Fort Worth expansion area, just to the east to the west.
Yeah, and then from the north to the south, it now is basically Sherman, Texas, which is the Oklahoma line.
Sherman to Hillsboro.
Yeah, a little farther than Hillsboro now. Really down to what I like to refer to as the Metroplex of Maypearl, Texas, which is...
I thought you were going to say West Texas.
Nah, well, it's in that same block, though, right? Yeah. It's almost down to west.
Yeah.
And so, and the other side of the equation is for all practical purposes and commercial agriculture aspects, all the way from Corinth, or, oh, well, heck, I don't know. Maybe all the way between Austin and Dallas is now broken up into farmettes and ranchettes.
Jay,
very it's few tracts of property.
58 miles from Tyler to Throckmorton.
How many?
258 miles.
Oh, wow. That's a lot farther than I thought. From but no, that's Tyler about to the Throckmorton, stretch.
And that's literally where the urbanization is expanding to.
Starts and ends, basically. Yeah.
Wow.
And so, and then again, from the north to the south, it's probably about that same distance, probably about 200 miles from...
I'll look up Sherman to West
Sherman
Texas.
Sherman to Hillsboro would be easiest.
Oh, you're going to do Hillsboro now? No, yeah. Now you're going to say you were right the first time, Trent?
I can. Yeah, I'm easy on that.
And for those that may not know, West Texas is not only a place geographically. There's a town named West Texas, and it's directly south of Dallas. It's not even in West Texas.
which also goes along with try taking your wife to Paris for Valentine's, and then she realizes you're only going up to the river.
You could take her to Valentine, Nebraska instead.
Yeah, I know. I took my wife on a special trip to Nashville one time in Missouri, and that didn't go as I thought it would.
All right, it's 126 from Sherman to Hillsboro. It's 258 from Tyler to Throckmorton. That circle is the urbanization of Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Oh, and my goodness.
The only thing that has even slowed Houston down in that regard is that the ocean is on
the ocean,
side.
The Gulf. It's literally called the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. And so you get trapped. They're trapped between being forced out only in one direction, and a big part of their economic drivers are all on the coast. And so at some point, traffic driving in every day, all their traffic flows basically in one direction. Here it flows in every direction because a lot of the jobs are actually scattered out through the different areas. Addison is the financial sector. Garland, Mesquite, and Lancaster are taking over their own sectors. Fort Worth has created its own manufacturing components and jobs. You've got three major car manufacturers that are hubbed out of here, two big airports. They make planes, they make trains, they make automobiles, right? And so those are the good kinds of jobs. And then we just build houses as fast as you can possibly build them and hope that you can find somebody that can afford to buy them.
And that we all think of Texas as being a very conservative state, and yet there is no example of a city that has urbanized and has maintained conservative values.
Yeah, no.
Not one.
Yeah, the Dallas-Fort Worth market is certainly no exception to that rule. And the interesting thing is, I do this all the time too, right? It's a kind of a common thing. Yes, there are some of the more liberal-minded people that are here are from California or from Chicago or New York.
Welcome to the Front Range of Colorado. Yeah,
that's true, right? And all of that is true. But those really aren't the difference makers. And what people don't like to admit in Texas is that There's always been a real strong liberal underline inside of Dallas County. They've had a Democrat or a Democrat feeling mayor forever, right? And the current mayor actually announced that he thought he was going to change parties. And people started warning him on both sides. Hey, listen, if you're actually going to say you're a Republican, you're going to have to act like one. And here's what that looks like. And so he backpedaled a little bit. But in the suburban towns, or the, you know, the, because Dallas itself is really not that big. Fort Worth itself is really not that big. But it's all the other towns that are growing. Frisco, Texas will be bigger than Dallas, Texas here in a, I would say within 2-3 years, it'll be, the population will be higher. But with that said, those communities have real conservative pockets, but Dallas itself is a pretty liberal city. It's pretty liberal.
The day they stop walking steers down the street in Fort Worth, Texas, is a day we know it'll all come to an end.
Yeah. With that said, though, you can find pockets of Fort Worth that probably feel a lot like Cupertino, California. Yeah. And those high end liberal elite suburbs of San Francisco. And some of it is because those people literally moved here and moved their facilities here. But the rest of it is, you know, so listen, there is another side to this.
Here,
as well.
Here, we'll do the other side on the other side.
Yeah.
Greg Hager continues to put everything he has, heart and soul, into his country roots, and his songs maintain that country roots so that we can keep our nation in boots, because everything Jay Truitt and I are talking about today has been built by somebody wearing boots. If you're going to build something, you better be boots involved. Greg Hager goes way beyond that. He touches Christianity. He touches country roots. He touches your heart and your mind. He writes all of his own stuff. And if you've not seen Greg perform, you need to get that done now. Go to his website, greghager.com. Maybe you got an event you'd like to have Greg and Andrew come for you. greghager.com. Second half, roll route just ahead. Welcome back. Roll route, Trent Lewis alongside Jay Truitt. Andrew Henderson is on assignment elsewhere today. All right, you were about to launch into another thing, and we were talking about keeping steers.
Well, what brings that to my mind is going back in time a little bit to a cultural identity, right? And you do see a really serious resurgence of that in a lot of respects. And I would just say this, right? I mean, it is amazing how many, for example, how many mega churches have sprung up here in the last 10 years and are jam-packed with young people, a lot of them from other places in the United States, that they never had been exposed to anything like that before. I mean, no one has ever, they came out of New York and they'll say, hey, I never even knew a person that ever went to church. It was something I saw on TV, but I never even heard about it. And so, they're not all going to get right in the beginning, right? They don't all figure it out, and some of them never do, et cetera, but the truth of the matter is, it's just really interesting to watch some of that dynamic. On top of that, sometimes that conflicts with their, what they feel like is their natural politics, and all of a sudden their actual values start to shift a little bit. Man, that creates a little bit of a weird cultural dynamic. But what those people also realize is that, I think in that mix, and I do think this is the hope that like Fort Worth has, because they've done a better job of like still clinging on to it, is that they go, you know, there are important things that happened in the past, and that the TV series 1883, it really did happen like that. And while you don't have to like everything about that movie, there's some really important facets of that maybe we should cling on to. And so you see really a lot of when they redid the Houston Stock Show grounds, and Matt Brockman and those guys, you know, started that process a long, long time ago, and it kind of outlived him as the CEO, but he's back inside that organization, you know, as kind of the communications guru for that system. And the reality is that they did that in record speed time, and they found mm-hmm. enormous amounts of support for keeping that cultural base and that thing. And you've been to the new Fort Worth facilities now, right? They're phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Here's
the deal though, Jay. You can talk about Houston, you can talk about Fort Worth, you can talk about the new facilities being built in Denver.
Uh-huh.
If you don't maintain the right culture, I don't care how nice the facility is. And that Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo culture is unparalleled at this moment.
Yeah. So that not a truer statement can be made than that, right? You have to figure out how to maintain the actual culture of what that's all about. And again, this is where I give big props to Fort Worth. They spend a lot of time. I mean, a lot of time, and they have some really key people at exactly the right positions to ask exactly that question every single day, all day long. Is this in keeping with what we've been about? And is it also keeping up with the times, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to do both. You want to have good lighting in a facility, you know, to say that you want to live like you did in 1800s, don't go buy a candle, make one, you know, and start from there. Coal oil lamps is the reason a lot of our ancestors had glasses early in life, right? But the other side of that equation is that, again, to the point you made, which is really what kind of stirred the thought in me of watching people come in, and some people really embrace it, you know. It occurs to me, and I didn't really realize this, that a lot of places really don't. It's not that they have the wrong culture, they don't have one.
Right.
And in rural America, we all grew up with these basic cultural moral codes and all those sorts of things, right? And you go to the city, and the first thing you notice is, hey, they don't really have that. Yeah, they all like the same football team or baseball team or basketball team, but all the other people are here, and they're fine with that too. You know, there's no peer pressure to adhere to the culture. I see a little bit of a shift in that. No, there's still the same number of people going to hate the Dallas Cowboys. That's all right. But and the same number of people probably love them. But the again, what I've seen, my wife and I both talk about it a lot in our travels back and forth through here, and it is to watch the Jesus revolution that has hit a lot of those places across the South is an interesting shift. Forget about what your belief system is, and just think about it from the perspective that there's a bunch of people that are actually having a different discussion in their life than what they've ever had before. And that's an interesting shift. Mostly, I think it's positive, but there's probably some exception to the rule there. But for the most part, I think it's a good thing. But it hasn't affected really the politics. Colin Allred is going to make a run for the Senate seat, and he's going to start, you know, with about 35% of the urban population vote, or 35% of the Texas vote, which is the urban population, pretty much banked. And so I don't think he'll win, but you know what? He has a real shot at winning. He's not a very good politician, honestly, so I don't think he'll pull it off.
I'd like to go back to those church dynamics, because that's a pretty incredible thing. If you go to the churches we grew up in,
uh-huh.
you think that the Jesus revolution doesn't exist, because the people in church are the churches we grew up in, I should say, which are all denominational.
Yeah.
If there's 100 people in church, you're like, oh my goodness, what happened today? What's going on? You know, usually you're closer to 30. Right, it must be Easter or Christmas.
Yeah.
And yet you go to, you can use that term mega church, but there's larger churches that have that feel that are not mega churches per se, but they're non-denominational. They don't conform to the normal values, or not same values, but the normal prototype of what you do in service.
Right.
And the young families are flocking to them.
Flocking to them. And I met a young man that he was speaking at a same seminar that I was at. And he happened to be a minister that was down in South Dallas at a congregation. And it's of a fairly conservative denomination, right? This is not one of the crazy rock band.
I didn't know there was a conservative denomination anymore, but go ahead.
Yeah. So he's in one of those. They started have their auditorium would hold about 1,000 people, which is huge, right? They're now holding up to 5 services on a Sunday.
Woofda.
And so you sit and you listen to that. And I said, I'm going to ask you like a really direct question, you know, are you modifying your message so that it fits somebody else's values? And he goes, no, if anything, we've probably moved to the right a little bit. And I said, what's the average age of your people? And he goes, well, that's kind of interesting. He goes, we do one service that we sing newer music, you know, and that we're a little more hip to the most recent music. And he goes, that service is full of the youngest crowd. But he goes, overall, our dynamics aren't that different. I think what you said earlier is absolutely true. I attend one of those places that has 2 different services on Sunday morning and still has 2,000 people that couldn't get in. And so they go to the 6 o'clock service at night. And I'm the oldest person in the room. Where it doesn't matter which one of those I go to, you know. And when I see somebody that's the same age as me, I'm pretty amazed. And it's full of young people with families. And
that's incredible.
You're
absolutely right. The song selection and how the music plays is all the difference on whether young people come to church or not. I don't care how good the sermon is. If the music isn't something they want to hear, they don't come.
Yeah. We picked this place literally based on kind of what the preacher actually spoke. I didn't really care about the rest of it, to be honest with you, one way or another. But
you're not normal.
You can go on YouTube and just pull up Shoreline City and listen to that guy speak. Pete minces no words, right? I know a lot of them, you know, you get into that Joel Osteen thing. Where they just tell people how to be happy and smile a lot, right? And it's a different. My point is, I'm not for sure that those are the examples that really cut at the culture. What I'm talking about are people that are actually being told, "Hey, listen, you're going to have to abide by a different set of moral codes than what you've been exposed to in the past." And again, I've gone to some of the sessions where into like one of the men's meetings or something, and you sit and you listen to these young guys talk, and they will tell you point blank, "Hey, I moved from Brooklyn. I grew up in Brooklyn. I went to college in New York, you know, and I don't even know what you guys are talking about, but I think I know you're right. So tell me what I need to do, right? Tell me now how I need to like just view." This is not a religious discussion. It's about how do I view life, period.
Right.
And that's a win when you can have that cultural discussion. I get deeply concerned about what's happening in the urbanization because of everything that you said is 100% true. There's no examples of success. I actually hold out a little bit of hope that we can flip it. And you know what? I don't measure it by Republican or Democrat.
No, I don't either.
It's just because that's a false moniker in today's world.
To me, I measure it by one of two things. Do you expect you're going to go out and make your own way, or is it going to be provided for you? It's that simple.
Point blank.
A bunch of people, when you put millions of people together in the same spot, they evolve into this, what are you going to do for me instead of what am I going to do for myself? I have to go to a break. We have one segment left, and I'm going to speak about another Texan.
For a second.
I'm going to speak about another Texan before we go to this break, and that is Dr. Nathan Bryan. He lives in Texas as well, just down the road between Bryan. He lives close to Bryan, Texas. Nathan Bryan does. How about that? NO2U, nitric oxide, is the reason that you need to know about Dr. Nathan Bryan. Nitric oxide is the essential element of healthy living. I have taken a nitric oxide supplement every single day for now 18 and a half years. I suggest you go get the science on why I do that. And you find that at NO2U.com. NO, number two, letter U.com. Trent is your coupon code. You don't pay the shipping if you put Trent in there. We're back with more J. Truett. Last segment. Roll out after this. Welcome back. Trent Luce. Greg Dowd wanting to be with us. He's not. J. Truett is. Yeah. If I had known Greg was dying to be joining us, I would have asked him.
Yeah. We could have asked him to wear a kilt and join the show.
So, set in for Andrew.
Yeah.
Okay. While we're talking about Texas, it would not be proper for us not to get your perspective of what has happened in literally West Texas, not West Texas, the town.
Yeah.
I'm getting mixed signals. I know there's a significant fire. I don't know how severe it is. I don't know really what's taking place. I've had people in Texas tell me that normally when there's a fire of this magnitude, every volunteer fire department is headed that way. They're not calling people to go that way. How severe and what's really going on with fires in Texas past week?
No, it's a huge fire. And it's already taken a handful of lives, and the weather's just not cooperated. It's just one of those bad combinations, right? You see this happen from time to time where the right temperature and the right dry settings and the right time of year with the right kind of wind, and you can create one of those fires that races faster than you can drive, and that is getting ahead of itself, right? Restarting itself, in some cases a mile ahead of itself, and skipping across and then burning out everything in between. So animals have been trapped in that gap because it's throwing embers and sparks way ahead. This is a pure old range fire, though, right? There's no trees in that part of the world to speak of. If there's a tree, there's a house. Is kind of the rule of thumb, right? And so you, if you see a tree, you know that that's probably where you do need to go find people and protect them. And it did catch some people by surprise, especially in the early days of it. I don't think anybody's by surprise now. You hear so many numbers that I don't even want to repeat any of the numbers that you hear about the swath that it's taken, but I think this is, it stretches well into Oklahoma now, into parts of Oklahoma there as well. And I think we may find out that this is the largest range fire that we've had in the United States in a good while. I'm going to be surprised if it's not when it's all said and done. And it's not over.
No.
I mean, it's still ongoing.
Well,
and it's going to stretch across the entire panhandle of far north panhandle of Texas and a fair chunk of Oklahoma. And likely will stretch up further to the west and southwest of the panhandle, which starts getting down into a little more of a populated zone, right?
Yeah.
Here really quick. To date, I don't want to sound like I'm being insensitive, but to date most of it has been in unpopulated areas with random cities caught in the path. But at some point here it's going to get to the place where Wichita Falls kind of expansion out and Lubbock expansion out, and you have a lot of farmettes and again ranchettes that people have that are, you know, little 5 to 20 acre places. And I'm going to just mention it ahead of time. The dollar figure of destruction is not the trigger point here. It is going to actually end up being, because the way government measures it, when grass burns, that's free. When it gets to a house, it's really expensive. And so the dollar figure won't be the relative term. These guys that in that part of the state that are getting their grass burned off now, and people are hauling hay from everywhere, try to help out the animals that are left. They may find themselves without any recourse for a year, basically, right? Until they can get recovered. They may be losing their early season growth, and you really scorch the ground at this time of year. Could be a blessing. It could also be a curse, and it just depends on what the weather's like after the firestorm goes through.
I've been to the three big Kansas fires.
Yeah.
And I've seen animals die in every way imaginable.
Yeah.
Nothing comes close to what those, particularly cattle, experience on the range with that fire.
Yeah. No, it's a, and people, you know, they see it on TV and they kind of, you don't, when you see it on TV, it's usually not in a movie. It's in a movie, right, or something, or you're seeing it on the at the moment when the winds are not blowing 35 yeah. miles an hour,
right,
and the flames are not four stories high, being whipped across, or where animals aren't stampeding themselves to death to try to get away from the fire fences, or you know, people cut fences quick. That's absolutely. Nobody is doing anything to trap any animals. They want them all to get away. We can sort all that out later, but it's from time to time, just the geography of the terrain will stop the animals from being able to go any further, and they're trapped, and whether it's in a creek or a small canyon. In that part of the world, you have those small canyons, and you have ravines that are Texas ravines, right, is what other people would call a canyon. And so it's a real thing. And animals get injured. People get injured. People lose their lives. A lot of older people just live out there because that's what they want to do. You know, I mean, that's where they always lived. And so they don't leave. And they wake up in the morning and the fire is far across the horizon. And there you can see a long ways. And you don't realize that you don't have till nightfall. You have till 10 o'clock to get out.
And, is the Palo Duro Canyon been involved?
I haven't heard about that. I don't think Palo Duro directly has been in the fire. You know what? I'll call a couple people and ask.
Yeah, I need to call some folks too. But
I listened to some people trying to describe the acreages, right, and they got lost. They were incorrect. Because they were also given miles dimensions, and the acres and the mileage dimension didn't match. But we're talking about just a massive swath across that whole section of the state,
and I think
Oklahoma as well. Now,
I think that nuclear facility or that was originally in the path by Canadian, I think it came out okay.
Yeah, yeah, and man. Imagine what would happen here in this part of the world, right? If we were to take a nuclear plant offline and have to figure out something else, that'd be a nightmare. Good thing is a lot of places out in that part of the world, you already have metal power poles and those kinds of things, right? Not a lot of wooden stuff that can burn, not a lot of infrastructure that's going to burn because they don't have wood out there. They pour steel and concrete, but... those poor fiberglass windmills, we'll see what they're made of when this is all said and done.
Something in my gut tells me that if one of those went bad, it started this whole thing, but I don't have anything to verify that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Those gearboxes catch on fire.
Yeah, if you've ever seen one of those things explode, that's true. They can spread sparks for a lot. It doesn't take much. I mean, you know, your prayer, I mean, the first thing that you your heart goes out to anybody that's lost their life, obviously, but I also hope at the end of the day, it becomes something natural that started the whole thing in the first place. That's probably the odds of that are low. But it'd be nice to think that nobody did it on purpose. And that happens once in a while too.
So Jay, in the last 3 minutes, we know that fire has an impact on the cow herd immediately. Long-term, it actually does beneficial things for grass and things.
Yeah.
But just in the context of what we've talked about today with Texas being such a prominent cow state, the urbanization of every city, the fire destruction of a massive area of West Texas, it doesn't bode well for cow numbers going forward in the state of Texas. I'm talking cow calf.
Yeah, no. And, you know, the drought, while Texas has had a reasonable amount of moisture this winter, the drought is far from over. And so it doesn't take in any of really of any of Texas, except for far northeast Texas, seems to have healed a little bit. But even most of East Texas, and we're talking about, that's a 10-hour drive between the two discussions we just had, right?
Right.
There's parts of East Texas that if they don't get just normal spring rains, it'll be a tinderbox as well. And that means no feed for cows, right? And you're not going to haul hay 12 months out of the year to try to support the cow-calf industry in the state. That's not going to happen. So the cows move. And where do they go?
North.
Well, they don't go to Missouri or Arkansas because they're not really any better. They may not even be able to go to big chunks of Kansas because they're not any better. So unless somebody in Nebraska is going to take them all in, we end up eating them as hamburger. And long term, there's some benefit to that as well, right? We get to improve the genetics on the next round. But in the short term, that means that we lose capacity. And these cow plants that are vital to the industry go broke because they lose their ability to actually make that transition as well. And we seem to be fighting a real uphill battle. Texas is not going to maintain its cow inventory like it was. That's a given. And I think a lot of people had thought, well, it did start trying to rain a little bit and that Texas would actually be building inventory. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, Texas typically has 2 million head of mother cows, and I see a big dent in that.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, because a big chunk of them in reality are at least grazed part of the year in that territory that we just talked about that's now black.
Right.
From soot, right. And so a big measurable percentage of the cow herd lived in that part of the world, and they're not going to live there anytime soon. It'll be late summer at best.
Once it rains.
It'll be late summer at best, though, before there'll be enough feed supply to really keep those animals in tone. And that's if it rains. If it doesn't rain, it'll be a year from now.
Which makes one wonder, with all of the negative sentiment about the beef industry, period, and the ownership of a cow, and all the stars lining up to be everything against a cow, makes you wonder who's really controlling what. All right, Jay, 20 seconds, your profound bits of wisdom for the day.
No, I think I have a positive one today. I think that there's still time for a cultural revolution in America, but it means that all of us have to participate in it. All of us, by example, if not by instruction. And that's a tougher thing than most people realize, but I think we still have a shot at it.
I'm all about cultural revolution, and that cultural revolution is part of the Jesus revolution as well. Jay Truitt, Trent Luce, we've successfully journeyed down this path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Jay, I'm Trent, both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route.